On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Thank you once again for joining us. I'm Father Thomas Dubé, and we begin our last segment of Bedrock Basics. I'm going to talk today about a subject that everybody loves. Criminals love it. I love it. Everybody I know loves it. I'm talking about freedom. It is surely one of the two most popular subjects in contemporary society, love being the other one. If there's a third, I don't think of it immediately, but they are surely at the top of the list. Now, freedom is a glorious reality. Some people understand it with something of a caricature. Many people do not understand the primary element in it, and that is going to be our accent. And what we're going to do is take this whole question piece by piece, because remember, the whole theme of this series has been ideas that are crucial to the human situation. Every one of them is, and yet not enough is said about them. Sometimes almost nothing is said about them. And about this primary element in freedom, one practically never hears it. No malice of anybody, but for some reason or other, it's just not talked about. And that is going to be our major accent. Now, we're going to take this kind of step by step. And the first step is we're talking about a glorious reality, freedom. The second step is to notice that we alone, invisible creation, are free. Nothing else is free. Animals necessarily do what they do. So that ducks must act in a ducky way and giraffes in a giraffey way. They cannot make choices. It looks sometimes as though they make choices, but they're driven by their instinct, which is one reason that a mere animal never changes the way it goes about things. Never. Never a new architecture for a bird's nest and so on. They don't have the immaterial soul, intellect, and will whereby they can think of something creatively. The nest of one species is always made in one way. We're changing constantly because, as we said earlier in the series, we are at the pinnacle of visible creation. We have intellects and will. And by this intellect and will, we are free. And we are the only ones that are free in visible creation. And notice, too, by the way, that we alone determine our destiny. We have an eternal destiny. And we are the ones who decide whether it's an ecstasy or a disaster, as we have mentioned several times already. Now, the next step in unfolding what we're about today is that only the real thing, freedom, the real thing, is glorious. We human beings have a kind of natural talent for getting things upside down without even trying. I have that talent. I presume you do too. We all see it repeatedly in other people. We don't so easily see it in ourselves. Now, that we will kind of clear the decks of misunderstandings, I want first to say what freedom is not. Just so we can see more clearly, and it's a most beautiful reality, what it actually is in its essence, and then the consequences of it. But I want to say what it isn't, so we see the reality still more splendidly. First of all, freedom is not removing all restrictions. That is the root of tyranny. A tyranny of the strong and the selfish. Whether it's a tyranny in a home, one person overpowers the others with regulations or personal decisions. It's got to be my way, and if you don't do it my way, you're going to have problems. That's a tyranny in a home. Tyranny in a state we know very well from history, past and present. So there have to be some restrictions, not too many, hopefully, but there have to be some that we are not tyrannized by other people, that we are protected in our freedoms. Secondly, freedom is not either a kind of idol that justifies almost anything a person wants to do. some people look at it that way. And if not entirely completely, at least to some extent. One of the euphemisms that the abortion movement uses that really gives away the store is the pro-choice label. In a way, it is very clever, and it does convince some people. But in itself, it shows that there's no intellectual case at all. Because when you notice the expression pro-choice, I'm in favor of it too, because I am in favor of freedom, very much so, but not used as the term is used and where it is used. Because you notice, every single sin is a pro-choice. Rape is a choice and a pro-choice. Otherwise, the rapist would not commit his crime. Thief is pro-choice in his robbery. And every sin is. A sin, you know, is an act of the will. As we said earlier, someplace or other, it's not simply an emotion. It's not feeling irritated. It's not feeling resentful. It's doing something with one's will. And therefore, every particular sin is a pro-choice of something. Not only a sin of abortion. Any sin is. So that is a misuse of the term or a bad application of it. If things were not choices, bad things I refer to, they would be mistakes. Because if my will is not in what I do, I might do something wrong, but I don't realize it, and my will is not in it, I made a mistake. So that a sin is always an act of the will, and it's always a choice. Now, that being said, we are ready for the heart of our message here. What is freedom? When I teach this as a matter of a course, and we go into much more thoroughly than we are right now, I distinguish what I call crucial freedom and consequential freedom. The crucial means the heart of the matter, crux in Latin, from which we get the word crucial, means a cross, the heart of the matter, or in more simple terms, essential freedom and then consequential freedom. Now, essential freedom, crucial, is a power to be and to do. Consequential freedom is the immunity we should have from being interfered with when we rightly do and be. And I'll say a word about that in just a few moments. But let's get to the heart of the matter, essential freedom. I am free about something only to the extent that I have the capacity, the ability, the skills, the knowledge, the goodnesses, I'm calling all of that the power to do that thing. Only then and to that extent am I free. Couple examples. Suppose after we do this show, somebody invites me to have a game of chess. And I'd say to that person, I can't play chess. And he might say to me or she, what's your problem? There's no rule against it. There's no law against it. We got the chessboard here. My problem pretty obviously is I'm not good enough to play chess. Good in the sense of I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the talent. Well, maybe I had the talent if I studied it or learned how to do it. But presently, I'm not free to play chess. And the reason is I'm not able to do it. I don't have the power to do it. The knowledge, skills, experience, etc. Let's take another example, much more important than a game of chess. Suppose you have trouble with your appendix and it is getting severe and you get examined by a doctor and you find out, he finds out or she finds out, a surgeon, that it is red hot, as I think they sometimes say. It has to be removed immediately. And so they bring you into the surgery, the operating room. The doctor scrubs up, nurses and all the rest. And suppose then, this is kind of cuckoo, but suppose it could happen. Suppose the doctor then told you, all ready to begin, you're still conscious. The doctor says to you, well, you know, I've never done an appendectomy before in my life. I'm not even sure where your appendix is, but I mean well, and I'm going to try this thing. And I'll cut you up here or there till we find the appendix, and then I'll do the best I can with the surgery itself. You wouldn't allow him to even begin surgery because he's not free to do it. Of course, there are laws against inept surgeons. Naturally, there are. But this person's problem is he doesn't have the qualities, the knowledge, the skills to be a surgeon. He has the freedom, if you want, to cut you up and mutilate you, but he's not free to do surgery because he lacks goodness. Freedom is always a basic goodness to be and to do. I'll give you another example. And it goes for cooking, it goes for practicing law, it goes for anything. One more example. My whole life as an adult, after I finished studies, has been teaching. Okay. A person is free to teach only to the extent that the person knows the subject well, is able to communicate it clearly, can illustrate it, and do whatever else a teacher is supposed to do. To the extent that a person cannot do these things, that person is not free to teach. Even though there's not a single restriction, the person is before a class, supposing they're paying good attention, teaching cannot happen because there's no freedom to teach. Essential freedom is missing. Now, the second kind of freedom is consequential. And that's what people mostly think about. When people would answer the question, are you more free now than you were 10 years ago? Most by far think they're more free if there are less rules and regulations. There's some validity to that. And that's what I'm going to talk about now. But if they don't have the goodnesses, they're not free, no matter how few regulations there are. So that this person is free to teach or to cook or to practice law only to the extent that there is competency on all levels needed in that activity. The freedom, essential freedom of goodness. Now, the consequential freedom is, as the word implies, as a consequence of having the basic goodness to be and to do, no one should interfere with a person rightly so doing. And that's one reason we have laws, to prevent others from interfering in what we're doing. And the laws, therefore, preserve, if they're wise laws, they preserve freedom and promote it if they're wise. If they're too many, then we have that tyranny again we spoke about a little bit earlier. In a pluralistic society, for example, in matters religious, such as the United States is, everybody is free to practice their particular view about ultimates. And even the atheist is free to be an atheist in our society. But that is a consequence that undue interference being eliminated by just laws, that's a consequence of having the initial goodness to be and to do. Now, I should like to discuss with you several implications that follow from this little bit of an analysis of freedom. Namely, I want to draw conclusions, especially from the fact that freedom is, first of all, a power to be and to do. Let me, before we get to the implications, though, let me just give you an example, because Jesus said this very thing, and it applies in the spiritual life much indeed, very much indeed. In chapter 8 of John's Gospel, speaking to the Jews, Jesus said, "If you make my word your home, you will indeed be my disciples. You will learn the truth, and the truth will make you free." Notice, when we have the goodness of the Lord's message, we're freed. Of course we're freed. And I'm going to be talking about that. That's another reason why truth is so immensely important. We spent, I think, a couple programs on that. Didn't mention this at all. But this is one reason it is so eminently important. Now, basing ourselves then on the fact that this freedom is, first of all, goodness, power, skill, knowledge, talent, and all the rest, goodnesses, the first conclusion I want to draw and present to you is that freedom is developmental. We become more or less free. Let me use an example, again from baseball. Suppose you've got a father with a little youngster, boy, could be a little girl, who the father wants the youngster to play baseball. Suppose the father never made the high school team and would like to see himself and this little kid make the team and maybe make a college team. And so that father begins by instructing the youngster on how to catch a ball and how to hit a ball. And at first, this little three-year-old, five-year-old, one day begins to learn to make a contact with the bat. And if everything goes normally, becomes more skilled with hitting, fielding, catching, and so on, pitching maybe. If the youngster grows still more, makes the high school team probably, the college team perhaps, minor leagues maybe, and if the youngster acquires the full ability, freedom, to play baseball, becomes a major leaguer. And notice, all the while, there's a greater and greater and greater freedom to be a baseball player. And that applies to teaching, to nursing, to cooking, it applies to everything. There are lots of degrees of freedom. And precisely to the degree that we are good. Remember, good means all, it's a catch-all term here, for all these talents and gifts and graces and possibilities and the rest of it. Now, that's our first implication. The second implication is that the virtues, humility, love, patience, magnanimity, justice, temperance, all of them, are every one of them powers to be and to do. That's what virtue means. It comes from the Latin word virtus, same spelling, practically identical, which means a power. That a virtus in Latin is a power. I think it's the same root as vir in Latin, which means man, power, strong man. Okay. A virtue, each one of them, all of them together, make a person beautiful as a person. Not only skilled as a basketball player or a dancer or whatever the skill might be, teacher, but skilled, not skilled is quite the word, not the word I want exactly, but good as a person. All the virtues together make one good absolutely as a human being. So that one becomes more and more perfect as one is more pure and honest and just and loving and forgiving and a whole list of the virtues. There are many of them, you see. That person becomes more free constantly because better. The powers to be and to do are there, the virtues, and that person grows to real person beauty. This is one way of analyzing why the saints are the best things we have on the planet, invisible creation, because they have all these goodnesses and powers to an heroic degree. The third implication that follows from what we have been saying, two texts from sacred scripture, because this is really all about what this freedom of the Holy Spirit is, spirit-originated freedom, I like to call it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 30, we read, speaking of Christ Jesus, by God's doing, he has become our wisdom, our virtue, our holiness, and our freedom. That's perfectly on target. You know, God's word really has it, and it presents it with a rare beauty. The Lord, from whom every good and perfect gift comes, has become our wisdom. Notice, all the wisdom, all the knowledge, all the fine judgments that anybody needs to operate, at least in a professional manner, you need wisdom, all kinds of it. And we need wisdom in other things, the routine nitty-gritty. A mother needs wisdom in forming the children. Of course she does. He's our wisdom, our virtue, our power, our holiness, and notice the last one, our freedom. And that's just exactly on target. The other text that makes the point somewhat differently is in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 17. Speaking of the indwelling Spirit, says Paul, now this Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Exactly. So people who are converted, to go back to a previous program of ours, who are converted not only from the first degree to the state, from serious sin to the first degree of state of grace, onto the second degree of better, as Bernard put it, to the third degree of heroic virtue, they are getting freer all the time, these people. And of course, always more beautiful. The fourth conclusion follows expressly and easily. Don't have to say a whole lot about this one. It is so clear. Sin begets slavery, obviously. And I'd like to mention two of the slaveries that are found in sin. It's not a complete account of it. There's more to it than this, but at least we say a little bit. Sin enslaves one to a personal ugliness. It is painful to be dishonest. It's painful to be unchaste. Though at the moment of the unchastity, the person doesn't think so, but the lingering results and the catastrophes that happen in human life because of it, very painful. Augustine, who knew all this by experience before his conversion, and when he was converted, was he converted? But he made the remark once, and he knew it by experience, every sin brings its own punishment with it. It really does. If I'm a liar, I'm going to be punished repeatedly in my life, the consequences of the lie. And also, thirdly, because of the burning, the guilt, that the pain of guilt and the burden of guilt one has to bear, not only with the lying, but any kind of sin. There's a real slavery to it. Let me mention, since our time is running low, a specific slavery that is to be added to what I just said. I was in a large one of our cities a few years ago, and in the paper there was an article, rather extended article, about a woman who is a hand model. She got beautiful hands, and she's a model for hands, women's hands. And in the course of the article, I was really struck. I wouldn't have realized how painful it is to be a hand model, maybe any kind of model for that matter. But she pointed out, and she used this very terminology, I am a slave to my hands. And she gave examples how she may not do all kinds of things we routinely do with our hands because they might be damaged a little bit. And she doesn't even shake hands with people when they offer their hands. I'm sorry, but I don't shake hands. Polite and all the rest. But she called it a slavery. And of course, it is a slavery. Now, I'm not saying that it's a sin to be a hand model. That's not the point at all. I'm just saying that if we are vain about anything, we're a slave to other people's minds. They're making judgments about me, and I can't even be free enough to be, whether it's hands or anything else. And I'm not specifying hands at the moment. Now, the fifth conclusion that I would like to mention, and it's going to be the last one before we get to a little wrap-up here. We are free to the extent that we want to do whatever it is we're doing. If we operate simply because we're forced to, we're operating as slaves. Used to be the custom in the U.S. in some states to have road gangs. I read about it rather recently that it's been resuscitated in one state or another. But anyhow, that's beside the point. Obviously, a prisoner on a road gang fixing up a field or clearing up a highway or digging ditches or whatever the road gang is doing, and there are men around, guards with machine guns, that person certainly is not operating as a free human being. He's being forced to do it. It's only people who really want to do what they do. So, for example, as a religious, I am supposed to be at morning prayer with the community. If I go there simply because of flack I might receive if I'm not there, I'm going as a slave. I should be going, and I think I could say honestly I am, because I want to pray with the community. And therefore, I'm operating freely, even what I'm doing when I'm doing what is required. And therefore, this is true in every vocation of life. I just happen to use an example there of my own vocation. And therefore, we're free precisely to the extent that we want to do what we do. Now, I should like to wrap up our series, 13 segments of it, with something I just noticed this morning. All through the series, I have been jotting down after each one of the programs what exactly we covered, how far we went. And I have that piece of paper with me right here. And it occurred to me this morning, before this last talk, that all of this together makes a symphony of beauty, which reminds me of a statement of Hans Urs von Balthasar, one of those very brief statements from a genius. He is a contemporary genius, in my opinion. By the way, I don't call many people geniuses by any means. I don't know if I've called 10 people. Einstein was a genius, too, you see. So I don't use the word freely. Von Balthasar made the remark, truth is symphonic. And you know that if in a symphony orchestra all the instruments are playing together according to the score and the director of the symphony, you've got a beautiful rendition of Mozart or Beethoven. And I look at what we've been covering. You can do that on your own. We don't have time for me to be specific, but I look at everything we talked about, the splendor of the human person, our first segment, perspective, the power of example, loving truth. It puts us in touch with reality, taking ourselves in hand, correcting what's amiss in us, for example, lighting the fire. We had that very recently. Correcting with determination what needs correction, and then now freedom. It all fits together in a glorious symphony of truth, because what we've been saying indeed is the truth, and it is a symphony. God bless you. Bye-bye.